Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. I am so happy to have you join us again. My guest today is Craig Rothman. Craig and I dish about our desire to live in a compassionate and sustainable world, and we share some guidance on how our fellow humans can do their part to lead us in that direction. Craig is the college lab technician at Lehman College in the Bronx, New York. He has been in the food industry for 10 years and was a former history major before officially pursuing a degree in nutrition. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Welcome, Craig Rothman, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. How's it going in your neck of the woods?
It's weird times, but we're rolling.
I know. Right, you know, ahead. I really should probably just stop asking that until flash forward 5 years from now. So maybe I'll edit this part out. We'll see. As I usually do with my guests, I always like to start first with an origin story as to how you and I came to know each other. Now, I'm wondering if you remember, like I remember, how we first met.
Well, I mean, I knew maybe of you. Are we talking about a phone conversation?
Yes.
Well, I was becoming president of the nutrition club at Lehman College.
Yes. That's exactly what I remember. Continue.
Yeah. So, I was calling, looking for advice from a former president of the nutrition club. And you were very gracious with your time and had almost too much information for me about how to run the club right. But it was very appreciated and needed to get someone who was so into doing interesting things with the students at Lehman College in regards to food and nutrition and getting people excited about it all.
I agree. I know that I'm the go-to person for a lot of resources, but I'm also, it reminds me sometimes of, there was a sketch on Saturday Night Live where Jimmy Fallon used to play the computer tech guy, and like he would just push you off the desk and be like, move, and I got it. So I feel like I can do that sometimes too. Like I'll just take over. So I'm glad that you thought of me as gracious and I thought of you as gracious as well. So being that a lot of people who are on this up on this podcast with me are from, you know, my own personal circles, you and I do share being on campus at Lehman College. Not only were you a student and I was a student, and now you're also working there and I also worked there. So we've kept in touch for quite a number of years, I'm happy to say.
Yeah, and we worked right shoulder to shoulder in one of these.
We sure did. Times. Yes. So tell everybody, if you don't mind, what is it that you do right now on Lehman College campus? And by campus, I mean the virtual stuff, but back in the day when you were, you know, when you were on campus, what were you doing?
On campus, on a regular basis, I had become the college laboratory technician, or the CLT as the acronym goes. And so that's just assisting with the different labs that we have in food labs specifically, because I work in the dietetics, food, and nutrition program in the health sciences department at Lehman. And that would be just getting all the ingredients that each lab needed, and assisting the students while they were working through whatever lab activities we had. And those can range from food chemistry to culturally sound dishes that we were preparing to show the students and to get deeper into cultures and different food pathways of different cultures. So that's what I did as my full-time gig. And then I also supervise field work for students now. So when there's a component of their degree where they have to go out into the field and work in a food service environment. And so I supervise them, and that's shifted to a remote option, which is kind of interesting because you're supposed to be getting out there. That's the whole point. But you know, with things going as they were, we wanted to allow students to continue working on their degree and earning their credits. And so I tried to virtually give some idea what it's like to be in the food service industry. And, you know, we work on things like menu creation and recipe development and, you know, things that they might use if they get, you know, into an actual facility and have to use their resources and maybe even manage a team in a food service environment. So those are the things I'm doing. And then, you know, I try to see what Lehman needs as far as a campus life, and, you know, particularly with food. So that's those are my side gigs. That's my side gig at Lehman, trying to figure out, you know, how do we make this into a really like a place where people want to eat and are excited about the food that's being offered there. And, you know, there is a lot of student, it's one of those areas, food, where everyone could speak up. Everyone can have an opinion. Everyone has an opinion. Everyone has a need. So you get a lot of interest and engagement from all quarters when it comes to food, because it's just something that we all kind of do.
We all kind of do it. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I want to come back. I'm, as I always do, I'm scribbling some notes down. I do want to come back because I also am interested to learn a little bit more about the challenges of developing content and programmatic requirements in the time of having to switch to online. It's not like our campus is set up to do that. We've had to transition in that way and what the challenges could be. But before we start that conversation, because that's more present day stuff, I want to go back a little further because you're a youngin', as far as I'm concerned, Craig. You're not going that far back in time. But can you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and some of the early food memories that you had? Like, what kind of family dynamics happened? What kind of culture were you around? And where, location-wise, if you don't mind sharing too, you know, what some of your earliest food memories were back when you were younger?
Sure. When I saw that you might ask this question, the first thing that came into my mind, which may be interesting for you to hear, is that it was pork chops and applesauce seemed to just appear into my mind. So I think that I had a special, that was my, you know, that was the special holiday meal for me, like a special occasion meal. That's probably what I would think, you know, when I was able to request food by name. So that's kind of a complete opposite of where I am now. But I would say it was a pretty blank canvas that I grew up with, Jewish American household. Mm-hmm. So there you go. There's your pork and there's your pork chop. It's like it's already like a weird juxtaposition of culture and my food choice,
right.
My food memory.
Right. And I was gonna say, so, I mean, pork chops and applesauce. Well, I don't know how old anybody who's listening to this, but I immediately go to the Brady Bunch. I think that was a scene, pork chops and applesauce. Isn't that swell? That was an actual quote from Brady Bunch, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm 1,000.
Really?
Yes, I'm not kidding. Yes, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe that went into my brain somehow.
Maybe. I'm going to have to look this up. I like fact checking while I'm talking sometimes when my computer's far away right now. So my question, gotcha, though, is like, was your family open to a variety of different foods? Like, were you able to eat a little bit of everything, since it sounds like, you know, like you mentioned, it wasn't necessarily a traditional Jewish environment. It was a little bit more open in that way. So on any given day, mm-hmm, were you taking food to school with you? Was anybody at home making food? How many people were at the dinner table at any one time, or did you do dinner table things?
Yeah. The dinner table thing, just because it's the last thing that you said there, it really, there wasn't any traditional thing that we started in our home, so it was very open to whomever was there and when they were there. It was just like me and my parents and I, and so there were no restrictions, and it was a buffet. It was whatever America could offer, which is a problem for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And luckily, it didn't become, you know, that much of an issue. There was no weight given to any foods. It was okay.
No restrictions, like you said, a little freedom in that way.
Freedom, you know, holiday foods were holiday foods. You know, holidays were just a kind of a gathering, and we tried to you know, keep the memory of the ancestors alive as much as we could, but they were just basically, you know, typical foods that might be on the holiday table for our culture. And, but it was a free for all for the most part, and I guess like maybe something kind of. Well, also, I could say that my mother was in charge of the food, but she just wanted to get food on the table. So there was a lot. This is very Americana, but there was a lot of reheating of frozen items.
Sure.
Just get the food out. I think this is like a food established kind of like motto. Just get it out. get the food out. And so she did, but you know, how can we get the shortcut to that? There was no like really pride of the homemade thing. You know, maybe it was just a different time. I'm sure it was in the 70s, 80s. And my lunch foods, I just remember kindergarten to maybe sixth grade having peanut butter and jelly almost every day and not having an issue with that. So I think I might have broken some records as far as consistent PB&J consumption at lunch. And that came back later in life too, when I found out that the peanut butter and jelly sandwich is the preferred choice of National Basketball Association players. That's like the food of the NBA.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. It went back to when the Boston Celtics were, annually in the playoffs. Kevin Garnett, I think, was the one who started the PB&J craze. And to this day, I still promote that food, especially for athletes, because it's like a nice, like, you get your protein, your fat, and your carbohydrates in one nice little package. So it came back into play. All of those days of eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches actually was something that I latched onto later on in life once I got into this thing a little bit more. But yeah, like, I think I just ate to eat. And though I enjoyed many meals and found them delicious, I never got too deep. I never like went below the surface of what this is. Why am I eating it? Is it good for me?
Right.
Are there ethical considerations? Are there health considerations or any kind of considerations? And I probably, just kind of sleepwalked for half of my life as far as my food consumption. And now that's not the case at all. Not really. I mean, I know kind of like the moment where things started to really come into focus, but there could be behind the scenes stuff in my mind that was just, it took maturity and it just took growing up and thinking more independently before changes were possible. And that's kind of where I'm at now.
Yeah. Well, I want to venture into where you're at now, because I do know the current you. I don't know, obviously I didn't know the past you, but that is really amazing for me to hear that. Such little was paid attention to back then. And now it almost feels like you're the advocate a lot of times for so many things. And this will eventually go into our discussion with Lehman College and campus stuff, because there were also opportunities there for very literal hands-on things, not just in the kitchen, but there's also, or there was a garden. And, you know, it was unfortunate too, a lot of things that I think that has been lost that I don't think you can get in a remote environment. But let us flash forward a little bit here. So talk us into, when did you find that moment, that aha, that revelation, that switched gears for you a little bit? And then walk us through the next steps, like what ended up happening.
Okay, let me see if I could.
was there a monumental moment?
Oh, there was a moment that I feel like the psychological trauma from that, that's still there, that exposure. So I must have been 18, something around that time of life. And just walking in Grand Central, PETA had a TV on a cart with a VCR.
Mm-hmm.
So, many people have not seen what that looks like. But although if you go to Lehman, you might catch. They're still in use.
Rolling into the lab. Absolutely.
Like, I'm thinking about my virtual reality like headset that I'm going to get for me, because that's the next consumer item that's on my wish list. And I'm still pushing around a VCR at Lehman College.
On a trolley.
Yeah.
So, and the microfiche is there too. There's a microfiche in the lab. I'm just kidding. I don't know if there's a microfiche.
Yeah. I've used one of those. That's amazing.
I'm a million. We're a million. Are you giving away your age too right now?
Probably.
Oh my gosh.
I should wheel that thing right into a museum.
It's the Smithsonian.
Keep the dust off of it. There was a PETA video being played on a loop, and I think it was Meet Your Meat, and it was like a real life horror movie. It was a nightmare, and so that left some lasting impact. And I don't know if it like was, you know, like as soon as I stepped out into the light after seeing that, like everything changed,
right?
But that, you know, a veil got torn away from my eyes a little bit. And I think when that happens, you start to then ask questions about everything, like beyond the whole, that conversation, of eating, what kind of protein are you choosing, conversation, you start to then wonder about all kinds of other things, including the plant part, like, where is that coming from? And, you know, nothing is in a vacuum. Like, everything has to be looked at really closely and tried to be worked out. Like, what's the impact, and is it causing harm? And, you know, hopefully that happens with everyone. As you grow up, you start to, you know, want to be a responsible citizen of the planet. I mean, you could definitely avoid it. And obviously a lot of our fellow Americans have avoided being, you know, part of the Upright Citizens Brigade, but you should be. That's one thing I could say, no matter who you are, what your beliefs and opinions are.
Right.
You know, if you could just do your best to try to make the world a better place, in a non-harmful way, you're getting on track. And you could start from there, and I'm sure there's a lot of good that you could do if you keep that in, you know, always in the background. That's the background music.
Oh, my heartstrings. I really appreciate all this. I wanted to ask a couple of questions to follow up with this for a second, because what started the conversation for you mm-hmm. to start questioning your origins of your food supply, et cetera, was really based more, it sounds like, on an ethical specific situation of having that video placed in front of you. But now also it's come into a sustainable discussion. And so, you know, we hear a lot of these terms these days, and I've had a lot of different people on the podcast who termed themselves as well as either vegan or vegetarian or plant-based. And so if you don't mind, can you define how do you term things? Are you labeling anything? Are there things that you see as far as approaches to different ways of eating that have to have labels on them? Or can you, I guess, invite a different way of discussing it so it doesn't feel like somebody is maybe being labeled or picked out in some way? Because I know sometimes people don't like to necessarily define themselves as, I'm a meat eater, I'm a plant eater. So yeah. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on that.
My views are, I guess, pretty complicated, and a lot of people might find them to be, I don't know, hard to mutually sustain the different, the way I look at things. I do the suffering part. So, I mean, that's kind of foremost to me, like, you know, the non-harming thing. So, it's kind of hard for me to take that out of the subject. I have to say that my job kind of puts me in a situation where I have to engage in things I wouldn't do with my normal diet. So I don't have complete control over, you know, like the my participation in the food system, and how I interact with people. I'm kind of limited and circumscribed by my profession and other people's expectations and other people's views on the matter. But it, you know, just as far as me as a private individual, as a private citizen, the animal, getting animals involved in the food system, in our current, I mean, you and I have talked about the Eat Lancet report, I think, before.
Yes, yes.
So there, Walter Willett kind of makes the point that, you know, not all communities and societies are ready for a full plant-based existence. And, you know, like the people sustain themselves on some of these foods, and you can't just take it away or, you know, enforce your beliefs on them. There is a lot to say for a kind and gentle way to introduce the topic and to have people, you know, voluntarily come on board with the way, you know, you think, and to really explain your ideas and the logic behind them and to be understanding. It is complex for me to really get into it where, there aren't, you know, places where it's, I wouldn't say hypocritical, but, you know, there's some friction points in my life. with the food system. But plant-based, yeah, you know, just using plants to generate all the macro and micronutrients that are needed for humans, sustenance and enjoyment of food. We don't want to take that out of the whole equation. So yeah, I'm very much onto the, and I don't know if you know Peter Singer, but he's the, you know, the philosopher of, I guess not, I don't want to say veganism, cause that's kind of loaded mm-hmm. too, but mm-hmm. you know, a plant-based, dietary pattern. But he also, you know, he argues a lot of interesting things. So he also argues that maybe some forms of shellfish are okay because they don't suffer, and they're also not terrestrial, so they're not doing anything to the land that right. you know, where we live. You know, they're in the water, and they're also kind of filtering the water. So I'm open to, you know, scallops. It depends on how they're harvested too. You know, there's a lot of like layers to mm-hmm. unpeel and to unpack and to, you know, to really understand what you're eating and where it's coming from. It's you know, there's, you can almost really go down a rabbit hole. Where do you stop? How do you eat your meal without, like, you know, getting neurotic about everything you're putting in your mouth? So that's also not good.
I was just going to say that, actually, Craig, in the sense yeah. of, I've seen you present on some things, and there's a lot of discussion about, you know, how much is too much when we start making ourselves completely crazy, when sometimes we don't even have access, not maybe me, but when certain parts of the population don't even have access to food, let alone quality food at that. And right. so it's really a discussion, I think, sometimes about this balance of, you know, education and advocacy and food accessibility and mm-hmm. involving everybody, like you said before, for those of us who are planet dwelling, if you are on this earth, you know, hopefully you're doing something to make some good out of whatever it is that you're working with and or leaving behind. But for a lot of marginalized populations, they might not even be able to get to that point to have to, you know, I'm just trying to put food on my table and feed my kids. Like, I can't be worrying about the environment and sustainability, but they might be mm-hmm. voters, right? They might be able to advocate and hopefully get their voices heard in some way. So mm-hmm. is there something that you can speak on that as well? Cause you've done a lot of research on this too. Like, I know how much effort you put into stuff like that. What about places that it would be so nice if we had that ability to speak to the quality of food, but what about even just the quantity of food? How do we even get food to someplace in the first place? Or is this part two of our podcast next year?
I'm sure there could be multi parts to this for sure. But yeah, that, I mean, that's the first thing. The first thing is that, I mean, a lot of people are used to a food system, right? Where they're used to a, you know, 21st century industrialized, mainly like a big component being fast food, easy convenience food system with low cost.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's okay. That's fair. You know, for people who are in other industries and they have other careers and they have families and, you know, they get home late, you know, to put the pressure that they have to go to their farmer's market,
right.
Spend a lot of money. And there are government, you know, there is assistance for people purchasing right. things at their market, which is great. But I also think that we should use the, you know, kind of strip down what is successful about the American food system. And that's calorie delivery, right? That's getting people food. We seem to have figured out how to do that pretty well. And not to say that I don't, you know, imagine that being disrupted, because, you know, history has shown us that it's been disrupted many times. And, you know, really food systems that were operating very functionally and efficiently, you know, there's a couple of years of drought or famine, and then you have some serious issues to consider. So I right. consider that too. But I believe that you have to use the same kind of format and just put the ingredients that you think are better for people and better for the earth and all the organisms on it, and kind of mix and match until you can design mm-hmm. a quality food system that's based on the one that we have right now. So maybe there needs to be more fast food based plant-based food businesses out there. I mean, they are out there, but there's a lot of room for development in these areas. So that is one thing. Like, food is a right, too, is another thing that I think of. I think just like healthcare, mm-hmm. and that's still a fight, right? We're fighting whether or not healthcare is a product or not, which is a ridiculous fight, in my opinion, because it very clearly is something that's just, you know, part of life. It's not a choice. You know, the healthcare, safe shelter, and food should all be rights of people, and they shouldn't have to jump through so many governmental hoops and be made to feel ashamed of getting assistance mm-hmm. to get food on the table. I mean, there really should be a lot of development as far as government policy. And there is some things happening. There is a big food as medicine push by the government to get Medicare and Medicaid to cover food prescriptions, you know, like a plant, like a vegetable prescription. Right. That's what doctors might be writing in the future. So things are happening in that area, but yeah, cost, accessibility, and ease are things that I don't think that we should cut out of it. We should just learn how to use like our successes and remove like some of the detrimental components in there, which are the ingredients and how you're getting them. And there's a lot of great research, like you were mentioning, that there's a lot of research showing how to do that. And there's a lot there's so many ways to do that. Like, we're great at producing calories. We overproduce calories, right? Twice as many mm-hmm. as we need. So there's a lot of opportunity to switch things up, and make things better. So I'm looking at it like that. And I think that people in resource, poor areas, that struggle to deal with this whole thing should also benefit from the, you know, the culinary arts that are behind it. You know, food shouldn't just be filling your belly or just like as a fuel. You should enjoy your meals too. And I think there's just like, there's a lot of ways to do that. And that often gets taken out of it, right? You're just trying to get people nourished and make sure no deficiencies or like you were mentioning, the portion size, make sure there's not overconsumption happening. And a lot of that, there's a lot of things that we could utilize, but there's almost too much opinions and information out there, and I can see how a normal consumer is just like confused and really doesn't know which way to turn in when as far as making choices out there. So I understand that's part of it too.
Well, I have 1 million follow-up questions right now, so I'll go through them one by one until we run out of time.
Okay.
The first one is, in your travels and in some of your research, yeah. is anybody doing it right? Is there anybody out there that we can look towards as a food supply model who might be doing the right thing?
That's a great question.
I know.
I think, you know, New York City seems to have a lot of things going on that are worthy of further investigation and maybe considering building future models off of. First of all, they're very involved in the farmers market.
Yes.
In that whole structure. They have their Grow NYC arm it produces distribution lists. Like you can start your own farmers market based on the groundwork that New York City has put in place.
Right.
You know, they have all these connections with different farms throughout the I guess it's a 250 mile radius, which would be your local food system. So they've done a lot of legwork doing that. There's so many programs, you know, during the COVID thing, the free food for New York City residents was something that they offered. And I saw the people, all the different food vendors that were given money by the city to provide emergency foods and get meals out to people. It was amazing. Multi millions of dollars. And there's a lot of like USDA programming too, to just change the game. I mean, there's just an incredible amount of financial support that's available in the government that needs to be unleashed with good mm-hmm. ideas and vision. So I would say that it just takes those that are, you know, part of decision-making areas in our lives to go out there and utilize these resources and to build collaborative like networks where you could turn vision into reality, and there's funds available. And there's people mm-hmm. that are, I think, no pun intended, but are hungry for the change. And that's through, you know, from the consumer to the providers, to the distributors. I mean, the cause marketing, you see the whole, I think you see a lot of, you see a lot of vendors changing what they're offering because the consumers are asking for it. I was a little not surprised, but you know, the new dietary guidelines came out not that long ago. And you know, unfortunately we had 4 years of backwards retrograde governmental participation here. I mean, the secretaries that are on, you know, from the last administration that put their name on the new dietary guidelines, you know, there's just not even a mention of plant-based diets. It's not even in there. And it's still recommending things that, you know, the administration that preceded this last one, you know, it just from a different, it just hasn't moved anywhere forward. There has been no progress. So hopefully things will change soon when they get to it. There's a lot of work to be done, but you know, things haven't really progressed as far as the top of the government pushing, driving initiatives like the one before, you know, Michelle Obama and I don't know, remember the exact name of the policy, but MOVE. But the, you know, the garden on the White House, in the White House property, and and the chefs at different school cafeterias that they tried to bring in. So if we could just pick up where they left off, I think things are going to look up. I think things are going to improve.
Yeah. I think it was called moveon.org or something back in the day. Move on something, if I'm not mistaken. And Craig, get up and move. I think, I don't know. I'm making this up. Maybe it was something very short. And I just to share with the listeners too. So every 5 years or so, the United States puts out these dietary guidelines. Now, I don't know if you, depending on time and day that this was going on, this is an open public forum that takes place, and they actually have on the FDA website and the USDA as well, they'll send out notifications for anybody who wants to take a look at the guidelines too. So even if you're not part of the government, you can actually I attended two of the committee meetings. They were fascinating. A lot of information came out as far as even like early introduction of food allergens to infants, like how to, you know, make sure that you are doing well with that, because we're all so worried in America about peanuts and killing the kids. And it's like, you don't have to be.
Right.
But when you start taking things away, the more you take them away, the more children are prone to assimilate to that. And then all of a sudden, boom, they're getting allergies when they probably would never have had allergies. So these are things that we want to make sure are coming in. But I understand, you know, the general public isn't aware of that all the time. Same thing with the discussion with added sugars, and same thing with the grain discussions. Like, I mean, it just felt like we were all watching this intently to see what happens. And it was like, oh, it's the same thing. It's the same thing as last time.
Yes. Apparently they ignored all committee recommendations.
Yeah.
And suggestions. They kept the same amount of added sugars, I think 10% of carbohydrate intake.
Right.
They kept the same alcohol recommendations, 2 drinks a day for men, 1 for women, where there's a lot of evidence that say you should try to reduce your alcohol intake as much as you can.
Or none, right.
And they're just in the wording of some of the recommendations, there appear to be industry presence there. I mean, you know, like you have Sonny Perdue's name on this document. And he's an industry guy. He's, you know, they're just, you could see that there's money involved here. They're not just pure good of the public, health interested, welfare oriented recommendations. This is being, there's some puppet masters working here behind the scenes. And so, I mean, I don't want to be pessimistic or cynical, but I mean, the only thing that you could say is, like, hopefully, you know, most Americans, you know, do what they normally do is and ignore a lot of these recommendations and listen to people
in a good way. Best,
in a good way, because you know, not that helpful. And I guess the dietary guidelines are more for health practitioners to deliver these recommendations. So hopefully there's these practitioners are more judicial in what they're recommending. They're, you know, people who listen to them, you know, how they structure their dietary patterns and, you know, are care about the science more than the last administration seemed to.
Well, it's funny, but not funny in that here we are talking about the demand and how the, you know, residents or the community or the population or the people will demand what they want. So you were saying before, even some of the farmers markets or even some of the restaurants are now doing different things that they hear. Oh, we do want more plant-based foods, or oh, we want to try more vegetarian things, mm-hmm. vegetarian options, or we want maybe to figure out how to work organic foods into the system at a better cost, et cetera. But then you hear stuff like this about, okay, it's the same old thing again. And it's like, well, then what's the point of advocating when no one's going to listen to us? So I think you're right. There are hierarchies for sure. And it feels like there's a very, very high level that you have to get to before things can change. But I think the more that we disseminate our version of things and educate our ways of doing stuff, and even if it's just, you know, for one or 10 people to turn around and make a difference, that maybe, like you said, maybe there might be this localized movement that then can start concentric circles working outwards and making some sort of effect in other places. So maybe right now it's New York City, maybe as we go it'll be some of the outward neighboring communities or states or whatever. It just feels very defeatist sometimes to sit here and be like, I wish things could change, and it just doesn't feel like it ever does. And not, you know, if I can join you on your soapbox there, I have many a time with, especially since you and I both work with the students. And just as a side note for people who are listening, you know, the community, the population, the student population at Lehman College in the Bronx is an adult community. I mean, the median age, I think, is 27. So we're not talking about kids straight out of high school who don't really, you know much about life or whatever. Not to make that stereotypical assumption about children, but in the sense of these are people who might have children of their own or taking care of their own parents or, you know, have multiple jobs and are going to school for the first time in their family's lineage. And so the thing that I tend to point out a lot is, you know, it goes by you. Like, you have to advocate for what you're doing for. And if you see something wrong, say something. Like, you know, make sure that you know that your voice is heard, even if you feel like it's not, because hopefully it will be at some point. I'm hoping that's the case.
I definitely think that people and the way they interact with those that provide their food, there should be a response, a, you know, kind of a call and response relationship where the provisioners of food adapt and respond to what their customers are asking for and what they need.
Right.
It should be like that.
Right.
It should be like that for mutual benefit, to sell more of the stuff that you're trying to sell. And to give people what they want and maybe what they need. And the education part, definitely, you know, what do you need? It's like,
no better, do better, right? No better, do better. I mean, often is the case, especially when working in some of the nutrition classes that I have, where we do talk about certain chronic conditions and the prevalence of certain things that I don't even want to talk about right now, because I just get so sick of hearing the same thing over and over about these epidemics in our country. But yet nobody talks about the epidemic of being malnourished, of not having good food. Like you said, you know, the caloric stuff, okay, maybe, but like even quality things. So, you know, where is all of that? And so hopefully things like that will change, but I don't know. It just feels, sometimes it is feeling a little bit depressing go over these things. You know, but go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there's solutions for the person out there that wants to eat better. The technologies can be leveraged. In trying to optimize my own diet and vitals, you know, like I check my blood pressure often, although maybe I don't have to right now, because I try to keep healthy and keep fit and exercise and eat right, and do all the things that are recommended, although it's always a battle, but you know, reach a good balance is the way to go. But I do think that there are more tools at your fingertips than ever before, and And there are tricks and nutritional tricks and things that you could to do to nourish yourself and to get more in line with what will make you a healthier person. So, and I'm trying to leverage them now too, so that I can share them with those who really need help, who are kind of lost in the wilderness, the nutrition wilderness, you know, the food wilderness. There's a lot of things. So I kind of try to be a guinea pig on myself to then see what it is that I can share with others out there. And there are like amazingly effective approaches, I think, that can work for most people, there's solutions out there. So I'm not that pessimistic, but you know, delivering the product is the challenging part. How do you get through to people? How do you, like, you know, your audience? And so, I mean, and mm-hmm. you're really good at things like that, you know, getting ears, and getting people's focus on what it is that you have to share with them. So that's a very powerful tool. So, keep it up. Keep doing what you're doing, Dina.
Well, first of all, thank you. And secondly, this is exactly where I'm going, because as we're starting to kind of wind down with our conversation, even though, you know, I could talk to you forever, Craig, and I have talked to you forever, mm-hmm. that I, you know, we've had these discussions before. Like we have so many ideas. Yeah. I'm actually afraid that I'm going to die before I can execute my giant plan, my master plan of taking over the world. And so, where do you see yourself going next? Like, what is, you know, both short-term and long-term, what is it that you're working towards right now, especially that you don't necessarily have to do a lot of hands-on things in school? Like, how are you integrating some extra time for yourself to move in the next direction of advocating and implementing whatever your goals are? And then future-wise, you know, 5, 10, 20 years down the line, what's next for you?
Well, there have been some challenges and limitations in what is possible now, especially since campus is just kind of like a ghost town at the moment. But I think of that first. Like I come from, you know, working in the food industry. So I'm very much, you know, have the mindset of retail and revenue streams, because, you know, mm-hmm. like I definitely have an issue with money and how it works. In our civilization, but it is a sign that you are doing something that other people are participating in, right? Like that's a sign of participation. That's how I look at it. So if and our community is Lehman, my community is Lehman right now, right? That's where I work. That's where I kind of call my second home. And so I want to focus on the food system that is there, especially since there's so many players that kind of orbit Lehman, you know, the city of New York, CUNY, and City University of New York, all the different entities there are, you know, we have a new food vendor coming in. And we have a lot of students, people in student government and administrative people and, you know, people in academia that want to do something, to want to get involved, want to participate, want to, you know, be part of the conversation in a very direct way. So, you know, building up and working with the food system that will arise on campus when we go back is something that I'm interested in, and connecting with other universities and stakeholders in the area to build an actual system that is, because we're in academia, we could take the chance to try to build something idealistic and get support through various, mm-hmm. you know, various avenues to do that and to see if this works. You know, like what is you build, and if you can imagine your ideal food system, let's try to do that. And it's my belief that if you do that right, and if you honor those things about food, just care and palatability, flavor, being filling, you know, not making it so much of a product, but sort of a way of life. And if you could provide that type of resource to your community, in a model that's transportable, that you could put somewhere else, you know, like spreading it to another part of the country and maybe the world, is the way to go. Is to not just saying, making suggestions or coaching and counseling, but to actually provide the product. to people so that they can participate directly is something that I'd like to do. So that's a lot of like dot connecting. That's connecting with like, you know, the city, like I said, and their farmer resource, and the academic world, you know, getting the theory and just the excitement behind cuisine and food and its, you know, food studies essentially, and the culinary arts. How do we make things delicious and appealing? How do we safeguard our food system? And all of that can be run through, I think, a academic facility. So that's why I'm very excited to be where I'm at, because I think you could straddle like the public and the private world and bring them together. And then, you know, it's like a huge potential to have that become a domino effect that other places adopt. And yeah, lots of opportunity but that's where I'm focused first, like building the ideal food system. And I guess we could talk about that some other time, what that would look like. So that's kind of where I'm looking. Once we get back to normal, I hope to hit the ground running. And I've been having a lot of conversations with those that are going to be key to bringing that to where I'm at. And they have the ability to then kind of expand that to where they are, because there's the bigger footprint. There's a big footprint with our new food vendor. They're able to work with a bunch of facilities. So, you know, and we're all, you know, hoping to bring people together so they can continue, they can have an ongoing conversation and dialogue. I think people lose the thread a lot of always keeping our goals in sight. So that's kind of where I'm headed.
Well, this is what I love about our conversations, and why, again, I often say like, oh, I don't mean to toot my own horn. No, screw that. I'm tooting it. And tooting yours too, because this is, I think, the difference between people who look at their jobs as jobs and then look at their jobs as careers. And we often hear about this word being, you know, being thrown around a lot about our passion or our desire to do something. When you feel it in your bones, for everyone out there listening, and I know a lot of my students are listening to this, but when you're feeling it in your bones, you can't think of anything but that particular mission and that message and how to make things better and different. And the fact that just listening to you, like while you're talking this last couple of minutes, I'm sitting here with a huge smile on my face, Craig. Like, you make me so happy that I'm so excited to know you. I'm so excited of what the future holds for you. Like, I can't wait to see all of these things come to fruition, because I know you put your heart and soul in it. And that's much like you were saying before, almost as an analogy too, with the whole food discussion of not just calories, but like, you know, culinary arts, like treating it like a lifestyle, really embedded in your soul, everything that you want from your life, your being, etc. It's like, it's not enough just to be a passive player. But then I think, you know, how does that come up? Like, we, you know, we can walk around with our flipping sandwich boards and bells ringing all day long, but you know, it's really, and you said this a little bit too before, like how are we infiltrating, like how do we get people to believe that there's hope and that there can be change, and that, you know, we're listening to them and we see these little positive sparks and that we want to help them achieve things too. Like, I don't know if you actually have an answer to that, but the point is, you know, it's just keep trying getting the message out and keep talking and sharing. Yep. I love all of this.
Definitely. I think, yeah, a lot of it is just it's just doing it. It's just to have it there and visible. Because I think a lot of the problem is it's just not being done. It's not, people don't see it when they're out there and making their food choices. It's, you know, it's too much self-work. It should be something that's just much easier for people to interact with.
Right.
Yeah, visibility is
right. Exactly.
Yeah. And it took me, well, and it took me on like, that note, probably a lot more years than some of the listeners to figure out what direction I was going to, and to find something that doesn't feel like work. It feels like, you know, like your life just feels like you're doing what you're meant to be doing. So patience with yourself also is also important. You know, it takes a long time to kind of chart a direction. It could take most of your life.
Of course. Yeah. And I think there's always, you know, if I may, how do people say it in the corporate world? If I could just build on that, or if I could just, I forget how the term is. Yeah. If I could just build on that. The thing that comes up a lot too, like you were saying, is that sometimes we look back on things and think that we have to regret the past. We should have made different decisions. I'm too old for this. I wish I knew then what I know now, et cetera. No, the whole point is that you're meant to be where you are now because of all that other stuff. That's where you were meant to be placed. Right. I believe that. And so those are the experiences that shaped who you are. Like you said too, Craig, like you know, you came from a fairly nondescript food environment back in the day. And now you're an advocate for like sustainable foodways across the country, if not the world. And so that's whatever led you to where you are now, not just you, but anyone else who's listening and really has it in their gut to do something different. Just keep pursuing it. Just try to focus on your own mission. Try to move forward. You know, try to look at the different resources. Act as if, surround yourself around with people who want to see you succeed. Ignore everyone else and just keep doing your own thing. So on that note, Craig, I wanted to find out from you, is there anything else that we haven't necessarily covered before we wrap up that you wanted to add that we didn't necessarily talk about or I forgot to ask?
That's a good question. I'm sure there's so much more.
That won't take more than five.
Yeah. Well, maybe those with high blood pressure can look into drinking a little hibiscus tea as an option.
Okay. Oh, maybe. I've done that.
Yeah. Have you done that? That there's some interesting studies and research behind the, and I feel like I've saw my blood pressure drop. It could be just, you know, I don't know if it's, it wasn't a rigorous scientific setup, but blood pressure and hibiscus tea. And there's just a lot of different things that people can do to, depending on what their issues are. So don't give up any hope. But yeah, the tons of territory that we can cover.
Many things.
And I would be so more than things. Happy to come back with you and talk a little bit deeper about any of these.
Yeah. I know. I'm going to have to like actually pause my entire platform because I have a specific theme. So I'm going to have to just carve out all of next year just for part two conversations with people. This is the dilemma of most podcasters, I understand. First of all, I love the fact that instead of you just coming out with some generic, you know, whatever peace on earth thing, you were like, hibiscus tea has been shown. Yeah. It is true. I'm actually, as you're talking, so I brought my computer over to me. It's true. It's one of the, usually we, you know, we try to be careful with certain like herbal supplements and stuff, but hibiscus tea is fairly safe. You don't find a lot of interactions or anything like that as far as, you
get
know,
your just, doctor.
Of course, yeah, always double check.
Permission before you start any get new dietary. Permission.
Exactly. Exactly. But it's true. It's true. Really. We have seen a lot of things about its effect on blood pressure. It's interesting. Very. I mean, you know, how much are you really drinking? You're not doing a gallon of it. And the second leading out question, is a two-parter, as I'm sure if you saw my email, you know what I'm about to say. So seeing that we are current, what's today? We said before, we don't even know what day it is. Yeah. I think it's a Monday. I think it's mid after. It's probably
celebrate all right.
We're recording this on
that we love from the past. And we know who they are.
And cherish, exactly. We do. Yes. And so that's right. So we're recording this on a national holiday when we should have the day off, and that it is midday. And we're currently, I don't know. So tell me, what is on your plate? Are you doing anything work related or personal related, you know, things that are currently on your plate? And then please do share with us, what is next on your meal? Like, what's your next meal?
Well, I have to say
meal
that,
list?
The Valentine's Day weekend could be very detrimental to your calorie intake. I mean, you could easily, and everything is so small.
You indulge
like calorie bombs, like, you know, these small chocolate dishes. And so if anything, I'm pulling the brakes a little bit. I have to try to get back to homeostasis. So that's kind of the goal, is to kind of, you know, it takes a while to get back on track if you fall off track with some of these holidays.
You need some gut rest.
So I'm looking into maybe a little fasting. I'm not sure. So yeah, there might be some meal replacement drinks in my immediate future after this last weekend.
Oh yeah, I asked you. It's okay. You answered them with the latter part first. So the first part of that was, what is on your plate today? Is there anything else that you're working on for yourself or for your job or whatever in that respect? Like, what, you know, do you have any work left to do today, or are you truly taking the day off because it is present?
Well, I would say if I did not like my job, then I would be in a everlasting torment, because the work kind of, you know, as you know, especially if you open yourself to the world, it never ends. There's always some kind of something to tie up, or someone to get back to, or someone to guide.
Oh, right? Man, so it never ends.
But if you like what you're doing, it's just, you know, like, it's just, it doesn't feel like you're being kept in servitude
forever.
It
doesn't feel like work.
So you know, like, I'm studying for to finish the grad degree for, you know, the test at the end of that.
Are you currently in a class right now? Like, do you have spring semester class?
I am in a class right now, because I needed another credit to get the grad degree. I did not go on to the RD stage, but I can in the future. So we'll see what happens. But so I'm going to do the DTR, which is the dietetic technician. Right, registered.
Technician registered.
So that test is in April, and I got the grad test in, I think, around the same time. So I got a pile of stack up books that I usually just use as a, you know, like an armrest. But so I got that ahead of me, and I got a bunch of students that are trying to chart their course through their careers. And so I'm pretty passionate about that. Like, so we're working on our resumes, cover letters, mock interviews, and what do you want to do with yourself for now? Cause you know, life changes. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on, but it's like a privilege to be able to be part of other people's lives and to help them figure out how to get into this food conversation, if that's what they want to do with themselves. So yeah, it's full schedule like every day, but you know, it's good. I enjoy it. And it's important. We gotta build our soldiers to get out there and to, you know, spread the gospel. It sounds terrible.
The future colleagues of the world. This is why you and I will forever remain friends, because I think we both come from a very nice place in our heart where we just want to be of service to others. We want to make the world a better place. Craig, thank you so much for spending the better part of an hour with me. I really appreciated this conversation. Again, I know we'll probably end up having to do, I'm not making this up. Maybe I really will just spend a whole entire season just bringing everybody back in and having some sort of panel discussion. I don't know. But thank you. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed your time with me here too. And thanks for sharing your message.
Thanks for having me on. It was fun.
Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina. And I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.